Welcome to A Well Cared For Human, the podcast that tries to convince you that you are 100% normal and an even better than okay example of the human species, despite the fact that sometimes we feel like the craziest, most incapable, or worthless creatures on the face of this planet. I'm Corey, an author, a creative, and the host of the show. Whatever you're bringing to the table today, I hope this episode proves to be a dose of inspiration for you on your quest to become a well-cared-for human. You can find the episode show notes, your free wellness blueprint, and more at awellcaredforhuman.com. And as always, thank you for listening. Hello, humans. It's your host, Corey, and today we're going to talk about narratives. Principally, self-narratives, or the stories that we tell ourselves. Now, humans are very good at making up stories about ourselves. These self-narratives tend to either be stories about something that happened to us, or stories about who we are, stories about what we believe and why we believe it. These stories form our identities, and they contextualize how we feel about ourselves, how we think of ourselves. So usually these self-stories are formed early on. They can be picked up as early as childhood. They can also be co-created with the people around us. So stories that our parents make up about us, or our siblings, or our family. I'm the smart one, or I'm the one who never does anything right. I'm the one who always messes up. I'm the loud one. I'm the messy one. I'm the dumb one. Stories like that. And then we carry those stories with us through our life journey. And because we have these stories, they influence everything that we do, everything that we think about ourselves. It challenges our decision-making. It impedes our decision-making in a lot of situations because we're trying to view our situation through this lens of who I am, what my role is. And it shapes the way that we interact with other people and how we talk about ourselves to other people. So it's very important to identify what our self-narratives are. Now, thinking about me, some of the stories I carried for a long time, and one that I shared with you early on in the podcast, was the day that my father picked me up from school, and he told me in the car, "I think no matter what you do, you'll never be any better than your mother." And that was obviously very devastating to me, not just because I was 12 years old, and because it felt like this was an unprovoked attack. Though it was a pattern of his at that time that whenever he wanted to control me or manipulate me in some way, he would talk about my mother negatively, so he never liked her. Principally, he blamed her for going to prison. He thought that he would never have gone to prison if she had not testified against him. And so he blamed her for that. He hated her. And it was a common dialogue in my home growing up. Anytime I did something that he liked, that he approved of, well, that's because you're like me. But anytime I did something he didn't like, or he disapproved of, or he was struggling to control me or get a certain response from me, it would be because you're just like your mother. So at this point when he says, "I think no matter what you do, you'll be just like your mother," it was a variation on things I had already heard before, because he had talked poorly about her for many years at this point. But this comment was directed at me specifically, as in, "No matter what you do, you'll never be any better than your mother." So it was clearly trying to assign a narrative to me. And this happens not just in families like mine, but it could in other families where your parents tell you, "Why can't you be smart like your sister?" Or, "Why can't you be brave like this other sibling?" Or, "Why can't you do everything right like your cousin?" There's often a comparative element, so those are the examples I'm using. But the people around us, usually the people we love, they assign these stories to us when we're young and we adopt them as our own. So that's one way to acquire a self-narrative. But also we acquire self-narratives on our own. So maybe we have an experience, a negative experience, and then we come to expect that every similar experience will have the same effect. So for example, once I went to a summer camp, and at the summer camp, I was probably 11 years old at the time, maybe 10. A boy pushed me down and called me bow-legged. And it's funny to me now because of all the things to call a child, bow-legged. But I had heard similar complaints from other people in my family, other people who had teased me. Often my grandfather, my mother's primary abuser. If you've been following the show or you listen to the Who Killed My Mother podcast, you know who my grandfather is and what he did. But my grandfather also said to me on several occasions, like, "Your feet turn in. You're pigeon-toed. You need to straighten your feet. You need to put one foot in front of the other. And so because of these experiences, I had this story in my mind that I walked funny, that I didn't look right, and that I could expect people to always comment on it, to make fun of me for it, to make me feel bad about it. And so I would go into these situations and I would be self-conscious about the way I walked or the way I looked, about the way I would stand. And so it became part of my narrative, these experiences. I had been bullied by people, or people had said these comments, and so now I came to expect that this was fact. But the truth was is that I grew out of it, and at some point that became no longer the truth. And so I continued to carry that narrative that I walked funny, that I looked funny. But then I grew out of it, became a teen, a young adult, and no one comments on the way that I walk anymore, but I assume that I just look funny when I walk. And I remember one time I was invited to play soccer. I think it was like a high school gym situation. Someone was like, join our team. Let's do this. We need another person. And I was like, oh, you don't want me. And they were like, why? And I'm like, well, because of my legs. And they just looked at me like I was nuts. And I'm like, you know, my legs, they're like crooked. They're funny. And this girl was like, what are you talking about? Because they had no idea. In my mind, it was something that was still true. The self-narrative was so strong that I just assumed that I was still walking that way, that I still looked that way, that everyone knew it, and that maybe now they were just too nice to say anything to my face. And so that happens a lot, where we carry stories from our past over into the present, or we come to expect something to be a certain way just because it was that way before. One of the self-narratives that my mother carried for a long time was her learned helplessness. She learned, it's my fault. I have no one to blame but myself, and it's more important that I stay loyal to my family than to take care of myself. It's more important that I protect the family image. These are the stories that she was assigned as a kid. And then even in her case, when she began to rebel against this, when she began to go out on her own and get away from her family for these brief periods of time, either she was in a relationship with someone else or she moved to a different place, she would get away from her family and she would sort of have these rebellious moments where she would tell people about things that had happened or she would do the things that she wanted to do. But it was coming from such a self-destructive place because deep down she still believed the story. She still believed the story that everything that happened to her was her own fault, that she had no one to blame but herself. She still believed that she should be ashamed of the things that happened. And so our actions don't always tell us what the narrative is, because sometimes there is a rebellious action that's masking the true story underneath. So for example, it took me a long time to realize that my bravery, my courage, my bravado was actually a mask for the constant state of terror and anxiety that I feel going through my daily life. So I can't tell you how many friends or people that I know have told me, Corey, you're the bravest person I know. You're crazy brave. You just quit your job and you chase your dreams and you do this other thing. And it's like, I don't understand how you can just put yourself out there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not brave at all. Because I know that underneath the acting brave or the acting courageous or the doing the things that need to be done is the fear that accompanies a narrative of I have to prove myself to other people. I have to prove I can do this. Or a fear that if I don't do this, something worse will happen. So there's fear that's driving it. So how can I feel like the bravest person if I'm really afraid? So our actions don't always tell us what the narratives are. But all we need to know about the narratives to start is, what narratives do you think you carry now? Like, what do you think you can identify? All or nothing statements are probably a good sign. Like something that sounds absolute, but it obviously isn't. So a statement like, I'm the dumb one in the family, or I'm the only responsible one. I have to do everything. So these kind of stories that were picked up from your dynamics. But also, what do you tell yourself when you're in difficult situations? Do you say, I'm never going to get out of this? Or do you say, it's never going to work out for me because, and then you say a story. Or maybe this happens to me because it always happens to me. These are the terrible situations and I have only myself to blame. This always happens to me because. So what are the stories that you're telling yourself about yourself? Because these stories really do influence our behavior and the way we move through our lives. So it's important to know what they are so that we can rewrite them, so that we can change the script, we can change the story. We can revise them to be more in line with who we want to be. Or maybe, often is the case, who we really are, but we just don't see that yet. So how do we rewrite these stories that we have about who we are and what we believe and what our experiences meant? So one way that you can start rewriting your narrative, your self-story, is self-awareness. And you knew that was coming. That's one of my favorites. I feel like I talk about awareness in at least every other episode. But awareness is learning to hear yourself when you're telling yourself a story, whether that's spoken or unspoken, it's just thoughts in your head. But what are the stories that you're currently telling yourself about yourself? What are the stories that you tell yourself, not just about you, but maybe the people around you? Like, people are always going to take advantage of me because I'm too nice. That also sounds like a story. We have to get clear on what these patterns are, these thought patterns, these behavior patterns that we have with other people. And you know I'm going to recommend awareness meditation for that, because the more we practice paying attention, the better we're going to get at catching ourselves doing these habitual things. And if you want more info about awareness meditation, please go back and listen to that episode. I think it's episode 2 or 3. Another way to start unraveling these narratives is questioning our assumptions that we have about ourselves. So if you have a story going in your head that's something to the effect of, I'm the one that has to always save the day. I'm the responsible one that has to take care of everybody. If I don't take care of everything, everything will fall apart. Like, is that true? And your initial thought might be, yes, absolutely, of course. It has happened time and time again. I have stopped doing this and everything fell to pieces. And that's the truth about our self-narratives, is that they seem really real. They seem really solid, that nothing will shake them. But there might be embedded in those storylines negative or limiting beliefs. Like, maybe you don't really need to step in and save everything. Maybe your energy and your time is better invested in other things, in other outcomes, and not always being chained to your desk. For example, if this is a work situation in which you have to always be the one who's putting out fires, maybe that's not the best use of your time. At the risk of being dramatic, maybe you should just let things burn. But you won't know how it might go differently unless you take a step back and question these stories, these assumptions that you have about your situation, to figure out if your view is being influenced by past experiences, or is it really a present problem? So I've mentioned before that for a long time, I didn't realize that my life had changed. So I was living one way when I was younger, when I was at the mercy of my family and all the many issues that they had at any given time. I always expected the worst. If something terrible was possible, it was absolutely going to happen. They were going to get the DUI, or they were going to get into the fight, or they were going to disappear, or they were going to get murdered, in the case of my mother. So the thing that was terrible would happen. But then when I moved away from my family and I began building this beautiful new life, the things I expected to happen were still the terrible things, but then they didn't happen. No one got a DUI. No one got into a fight. The car did not burst into flames. This story doesn't seem as accurate anymore. It used to be ironclad. I would expect this, and yep, that was the worst thing that could happen, and it did. That was the story for a long time because of my past experiences. And so there comes a point where you need to reevaluate your life and ask yourself if the things that you believed and you thought in the past are still true, because it's very possible that they're not true anymore. If you're growing, if you're changing, if you're investing in yourself, if you're getting away from people who used to torment you, or you're getting away from the people who brought out the worst in you, which is also another possibility. But in any case, as you change, so should the story. But often we don't alter the story as we go along. We start telling ourselves either the same old story or a new negative story about what's going on. Another way to shift and improve the narrative is to focus on the positive, or to focus on our strengths. So a lot of the stories that we tell ourselves are negative stories. So I never do anything right. Everything bad happens to me. I'm never going to find anyone who's going to treat me the way I deserve to be treated. I'm never going to have the job I really want. What all these stories have in common is that they're very negative. But if we focus on our strengths or on the positive aspects of a situation, that will also help us to shift and tell the story. Even the story like, I always have to be the responsible one. That sounds very negative. It comes from a very exhausted place, right? It's tiresome being the only responsible person around. But if you were to shift the story, even just in its tone, I'm the person everyone can count on. I'm a very dependable person in my interactions with others. People know that I care about them and that I love them because I show up when they need me to show up. But it's also okay to show up for myself and to be the person that I can depend on as well. So see, we've shifted the tone, but we've also broadened kind of the scope of the story as well. So thinking about that, is there a way to take the stories that we're telling ourselves and make it serve us better? Again, not just in its tone, being more positive rather than beating ourselves up from the inside, but can it also be more loving and affirming in its objectives? So when you say, I am the dependable one, do you also tell yourself, and I can be dependable for me? Like, it's okay to prioritize myself first. That's a new kind of story. That's a great kind of story to tell yourself. One of the ways I've also relied on rewriting my self-narratives is a lot of self-compassion. So when I was growing up and I had a mother like mine, a father like mine, I was really hard on myself. I was treating myself like a problem that needed to be solved, that I had to keep tight reins on myself or I was going to become so emotionally unstable like my mother, I was going to lose it. And not only was I going to lose it, but I couldn't be trusted to make decisions. I was always just one bad decision from careening off the cliff into addiction, or thought I was just one misstep away. So I treated myself like a problem, as something that needed to be controlled. And in addition to treating myself poorly like that, I often thought that I deserved all the things that were happening to me. So I had an impossible choice as a kid, which is that I could live with my mother, be with my mother, and get the love I needed as a child. Because my mother was always very loving, always very affirming. You know, she would tell me, you're so smart, you're so beautiful, you're the best thing that I ever did, you're amazing. But she was also very erratic and unsafe, right? She made poor choices that put us in physical danger often. And then my father was the other parent. You know, I went back and forth because they were divorced. And with my father, I had the stability I needed as a child, meaning that there was someone who woke me up in the morning and got me to school and fed me, who always made sure I had the books and clothes and things that I needed, who was very stable in his day-to-day life, but who was completely devoid of love. And not just devoid of love and affection, but cruel. You know, my father was often cruel in the way that he treated me. So it was an impossible choice between a mother who loves you, but who makes you unsafe, and a father who can give you what you need to be safe, but is cruel to you. And so anytime that I chose my mother, that I went to my mother, my father would say something to the effect that would stoke that self-narrative that it was my own fault for living like that. So he'd be like, well, why did you go there? You know, you have no one to blame by going there and putting up with her mess, her insanity, her chaos. But I went there because I needed to be loved. Like, that was a need that a child has. And it was certainly my need as a child. So now, as an adult, I can see that with a more compassionate lens. I can see why I made the decisions that I made, even though they were impossible choices. I know why I did what I did. But for a long time, I really beat myself up about that. I'm like, well, you know, I guess the suffering is my own fault. I have no one to blame but myself for the way I suffered through those things with my mom. I didn't have to. I could have just stayed with him. So it can also be very healing to review the decisions you make, to rewrite those narratives around your decisions or around your experiences to be much more loving and compassionate. Understand who you are and why you did what you did. Also, I tend to, no surprise to you, I'm sure, do a lot of writing, a lot of reflecting. And that really helps me to, not just in my work as a writer, to write stories. So of course, as a writer, I'm writing stories every day. Most of them are fiction. I'm exploring my ideas in that capacity. But you can also do that with your own life. You can also turn your experiences one way or another. You can try to see them in a different light. You can try to understand them better. I do a lot of that with journaling. And maybe that's just because of the time I've spent as a writer, as a full-time writer, figuring out how to tell stories. I understand that you can tell the same story many different ways. All the stories I've had with my mother, those experiences, there are many ways I could have shared those stories or told those stories. I could have framed myself as a hero or as a villain or as a victim or a captive. You know, there's so many ways that you can tell the same story. And so consider the possibility that maybe there's a better way to tell your own story. And for you to figure out what that better way is would require thinking about it, reflecting on your experiences, writing it out, exploring it. You know, with the creativity pillar, I'm all about people using writing to explore their experiences, their emotions, their worldview. So definitely rely on that if you think that it might be a healing experience for you. But all in all, what I want you to take away from today's topic is that 100% guaranteed, you're telling yourself stories about who you are, the experiences that you've had, where your life is going, what your life is like now. And I want to give you permission to question those stories and find out for yourself, through some reflection and exploration, are those stories true? Are they meaningful to you? Are they even your stories, or were they assigned to you by someone else? And if they were assigned to you by someone else, do you still want to prescribe to those stories? Do you still want to believe in them and invest in them and live by them? Or do you want to let them go? Or do you want to write a new story for yourself? because all of these things are available to you. And I want to encourage you to use the power and freedom and personal authority that you have to write the story of your life. And that's it for today, dear human. As always, I hope you find this episode useful. And if you would like to write into the show today and ask me for my thoughts on something that you're dealing with, I would love to hear from you through any of my social media or through email, Corey@CoreyMShram.com. Otherwise, I will be back next week with another episode of A Well Cared For Human. And until then, please take good care of you. This episode of A Well Cared For Human was written and produced by me, Corey Marie. The music was by Late Night Feeler and Esther Abrami. If you like what I'm doing here, please consider visiting my Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you get early ad-free access to the episodes, as well as a monthly patrons-only Q&A, bonus videos, and more. Not to mention that your Patreon support lets me know that you find value in the show and want it to continue. You can find me on Patreon by visiting www.patreon.com/Corey Marie. If you can't support the show financially, that is okay. You can still subscribe to the show, leave a review of the show, and recommend the show to your friends, not just the neurotic ones. All of this helps so much. And as always, thank you for listening.